If this were Mexico, maybe the place would be better known. At least south of our border, it seems, archaeological sites are prized, glossily publicized, declared must-sees for camera-toting tourists, and swarmed with the colorful opportunists that cash-flush strangers attract, tamale vendors, serape salesmen, and trinket peddlers. Not that I'd wish all that on so lovely a place as Larry Lucky's Ortona Indian Mound Park. Yes, that's its whole official name. But it would be nice to see this little-known Glades County attraction get the accolades it deserves. It is, after all, one of the state's most significant archaeological sites, rivaling the Miami Circle in importance. You haven't heard of the Miami Circle either? I rest my case. Both places offer unique glimpses of the peninsula's past, of the cultures that thrived here long before any Midwesterners arrived. Spreading over 30 scrubby, oaky acres bordering the unincorporated hamlet's historic cemetery, the Ortona site dates to about 200 A.D. It boasts the oldest and longest canal system dug by North American Indians, 2, 3, and 4-mile-long canals 20 feet wide and 6 feet deep. There's also a 20-foot-high burial mound at the site, which was originally discovered by surveyors in the 1800s and long believed to have been dug by European pioneers rather than native people with nothing more than the natural materials at hand. Before the Ortona site was studied, archaeologists believed native cultures in southwest Florida didn't truly begin to settle down, stratify, and flourish until centuries later. Now they know that people in this region organized themselves into complex societies much earlier. Best known in southwest Florida are the Colusa, who ruled the region when the Spaniards got here in the 16th century and to whom the Ortona people may have been related. The Ortona people used their canals to reach the Caloosahatchee and to skirt a small waterfall at its headwaters, said former Glades County property appraiser Larry Lucky, for whom the park is named, when it opened. And though any enterprise like this takes a team, Lucky deserves the lion's share of the credit. It had just been a garbage dump for many years, he told me, but I saw so much potential there if you looked from the neck up at all the trees and open spaces. We had no grant writers, of course, and we couldn't afford to spend any real money on it. But I told the county that if they would dedicate the land, I would dedicate my life, limbs, and finances to getting a park there. So Lucky persuaded and politicked, picking up countless loads of trash in the process, and sure enough, he got it done. Now, in addition to a kiosk with graphics and signs explaining the site's history, there's a boardwalk, a kids' playground, picnic benches, covered pavilions, and, critical in any remote rural place, restrooms. I felt like it was too important a place to be left alone, Lucky told me. It's a wonderful place, and now we have our celebrations out there all the time, our marriages, our family reunions, our anniversaries, and our annual cane grinding festival every January. And Lucky is still working at it. If someone calls me and says something's wrong, I dart out there, he says. But on a summer afternoon, it's hard to imagine anything ever being wrong in so serene a spot where insect trills rise and fall like quiet breathing. In a clearing where sunlight flutters through the leaves of ancient interlaced live oaks squats a rusty cane mill. Trails wind around an old sand mine lake past sandy prickly pear scrub where a gopher tortoise placidly tugs at a thin tuft of grass. Yet on these 30 acres, the whole array of human behavior has played out, weddings and burials, garbage dumping, and harvest festivals. And if I were you, I'd take half a day and head out for a look before the hordes arrive.